Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
I'm sure that all of you have heard that age-old wisdom that says, time flies like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana. Well, today I want to talk about fruit flies and photography, I guess. And that is this myth about how we are supposed to create our work and preserve our work for the future, that there's something magic in about that. And I remember this being drummed into my head in the very first class I ever took in photography about how critically important it was to thoroughly wash my prints, to remove all evidence of fixer and the sodium thiosulfate that would eventually make the picture fade and turn yellow. And no, we had to go in the opposite direction and wash our prints exceedingly well so that they could last forever and ever and ever. That is to say, to some degree, create for the future. And with that in mind, it seemed perfectly logical that we were supposed to process all of our images and carefully store them in the most acid-free, environmentally friendly boxes and portfolio cases and that kind of thing, so that there would be no deterioration and they might last for hundreds of years, so that someone in the future would be able to look at our images with the same fidelity that we had when viewing them today. Create for the future. Then there were stories like the rescue of Eugene Atchet's images by Bernice Abbott, and how precious it was that she saved these images of old France for future generations. I can't complain with that, because I'm glad she did. But there is this idea attached with photography that it carries forward into history long after our demise, and that future generations will enjoy our work, or at least have the opportunity to enjoy our work, but only if we create it with this incredible fixation, no pun intended, on archival processing. That was never questioned. That was always just sort of a given, that producing work so that it could last for a long time was what we were all supposed to be doing. And if somehow we were sloppy and we didn't thoroughly wash our prints or didn't store them in proper archival materials, that we weren't very serious photographers, that we were not respecting our work and we were losing the opportunity of having our work seen by future generations. Well, that's a nice theory. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and I really don't want to shoot that theory down, and I certainly don't want to encourage people to become sloppy or to treat their work with disrespect. But the truth is, I've been in photography long enough that I've seen luminaries rise and then disappear from the public eye. That maybe they had work that was processed for the generations, but in fact, the only people who would probably ever see the work are the contemporaries of the photographer themselves. Let me illustrate this, if I can, with an example from outside of photography. One of the things that I love almost as much as photography is the short story. And boy, there are lots and lots of people who write short stories, and some of them are well-known, Chekhov and O. Henry and people like that, and some aren't. But there's an interesting series of books that was published in the turn of the last century by Edward J. O'Brien called The Best Short Stories of, and then he did one every year. So there was a book for every year. And I was recently reading in a copy I found in a used bookstore of The Best Short Stories of 1926, curiously enough, exactly 100 years ago. And here are the names of the writers, the authors of these short stories that were considered the best of 1926. Barry Benefield, Jack Carver, Donald Corley, Chester T. Crowell, A.E. Dingle, Walbridge Dudley, Arthur Huff Fawcett, Zona Gale, Tupper Greenwald. Any of these sound familiar? Oh, here's one, Ernest Hemingway. Ah, we all know Ernest Hemingway, so he was included in this with a best short story of 1926. But curiously enough, Ernest Hemingway didn't even start his career until just a couple of years earlier. He published his first work in 1923, so he was not a well-known writer in 1926. He was as unknown as all the other names I've read. Let me add Manuel Komroff, Milutin Krunich, Grace Sartwell Mason, Susan Merriweather, and finally, the first person who might have a claim to legitimate long-term fame, Ring Lardner. He was a well-known short story writer by 1926, but of all the names I've read, his is the only one that was famous not only during his time, but after his time. All the rest of those people that I read, except for Ring Lardner and Ernest Hemingway, what happened to them? They just disappeared into history. So even though they were celebrated, keep in mind, this is the best short stories of 1926. Even though they were celebrated in 1926 for having done something truly extraordinary, by now, they're all forgotten, unless you happen to find a copy of this 100-year-old book. I also grant, of course, that there's the possibility that some of those people are people that I don't know and I've never heard of, but they may be famous. But I read a lot of short stories, so I kind of doubt it, but you'll let me know if I've missed somebody. My point is this, that the best will be forgotten. It's only a matter of time. Our work is not going to become more collectible, more visible, more seen, more enjoyed in the future. As a matter of fact, if history tells us anything, it's likely to become more and more lost with the passage of time. And even though we might be able to make a case that our work will be remembered for 20 years or 50 years, that is to say, by people who maybe knew us and are roughly of our generation, plus or minus a generation, even the best will be forgotten, if not in 20 years, in 200 years. Like I say, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but those are some realities that are simply not deniable. So that leads to the question then, who is our audience? If our audience isn't the generations that will come in the passage of time, then who is our audience? Maybe the better question is to ask, when is our audience? My answer seems to be now. Now is the best time for your work to connect with an audience for two very simple reasons that go beyond the evidence of history. The first is this, that all of our work is, to a large degree, the product of the times in which we live. That is to say, there's a certain zeitgeist in the consuming public, and we're certainly attuned, for example, in my generation, to the beautiful landscape photography of the West Coast landscape people, Yosemite and Yellowstone and all that stuff, because that's such a critically important thing for all of us. But if you go back a couple of hundred years, you would see that a lot of landscape that you and I might think is beautiful was considered a barrier and an incredible physical challenge to explore. Times change, and when times change, people change. What's considered a good photograph changes. Can you imagine someone from 100 years ago looking at the photography of, I don't know, Joel Peter Witkin? Would they think that's good photography? Or do we have a different mentality, a different kind of expectation, a different sensitivity today, so we can look at work produced in our generation and admire it when other generations in the past as well as in the future might look at our work and say, oh, how trivial, how trite, how insensitive, how cruel. If you don't think that's possible, consider Curtis's position in the history of photography. At the time, people thought what he was doing was marvelous. Now, there's a lot of people that think what he did was exploitive. So that's the first problem, is that what we think is interesting and good photography and the images that we are most proud of today may not be work that will survive into the future because of its aesthetics, because of what we photograph and how we photograph it. And then the second reason why I think our best audience is our contemporary audience today is because, quite honestly, you are the very best agent you could possibly have for promoting your work and getting it out there in the world. No one cares about your work the way you do. And just a sort of silly example, but maybe it'll make the point. You might be highly motivated to submit your work to LensWork and get it published in the magazine and sent out into the world. Do you think your grandkids will be interested in submitting your work to LensWork, assuming LensWork is even around in two generations? Wouldn't you agree that of all the people who have ever been or ever will be, you are the best person with the most interest, the most knowledge, the most passion for sharing your work? So if sharing your work is important, doesn't have to be obviously, but for a lot of us it is, if sharing your work is important, then sharing it to today's audience is likely to be the place you need to spend your time, less worrying about the future audience, which may not exist for all kinds of reasons. So what do we do? Well, the first thing I think you do is you take every opportunity you possibly can to share your work. Like I say, if sharing your work is important to you, then you never know who you will connect with. And sometimes those connections will lead to the most amazing things. I'll give you an example. I've talked about this before, but I don't remember if I've talked about it in this context. We received a portfolio from an unknown photographer who had never been published. As far as I recall, he told me he'd never even submitted work to any other magazine, but he loved photography, he was passionate about photography, he was very talented at it, and he sent us what we characterized as an over-the-transom submission. That is to say, unknown, unexpected, it just sort of shows up, and we opened the box and went, oh my God, look at these, they're absolutely fantastic. Photographer's Mitch DeBrowner. We published his work in LensWork and included one of his images on the cover of LensWork. Fast forward a few months. I'm at PhotoLucida doing a portfolio review, and they had a table out there where you could put samples of things for people to see, and I had placed some copies of LensWork, including the one that had Mitch DeBrowner's image on the cover. And it got picked up and viewed by a woman who was visiting PhotoLucida from China, searching for American and Canadian photographers that she could invite to a huge photographic celebration in Lishui, China. This was in 2009. So she asked around and found out that I was the publisher, found me out during the conference and said, do you know this person, Mitch DeBrowner? I said, yes, you know, I've interviewed him and we've published him, nice guy. She said, do you suppose he would be interested in coming to China to show his work? And I said, well, I would guess he might be interested. Sure, let me contact him. And she said, oh, and if Mitch DeBrowner is willing to come to China and exhibit his work in this giant photo event that's happening, I'd like you to come too, and you can show some of your work. And so all of a sudden I was highly motivated to talk to Mitch. I called him up and I said, hey, Mitch, here's the opportunity. What do you think? He said, of course we're going to go. And we did, and we had a great time. We had some time to photograph. And Mitch got representation by a gallery in China that has sold quite a bit of his work. All because he took the opportunity to promote his own work, himself, unsolicited, over the transom, knowing that he was running the risk of being rejected. But he took the opportunity, and it led somewhere that he could not have possibly predicted. If our audience exists today, then take every opportunity you can today to get your work out there and be proactive about looking for places where you can get your work out there. Which brings me to another important point. Please, don't confuse audience with commerce. A lot of photographers tell me what they really are hoping for is to get represented by a big gallery who will sell their work and create fame and fortune. And some do. A few do. And it's lovely when it happens. Every time we sell a piece of work, it's not only a stroke to our ego and a compliment to our creative process, but it also helps fund this very expensive hobby that we're involved in with travel and expensive equipment and printers and et cetera, et cetera. So commerce becomes something that becomes very natural for us to want to pursue. But pursuing an audience is different than pursuing commerce. And in my experience, pursuing audience might lead to commerce, might not. But it's one of the best ways to get into commerce, if you want to sell work, is to get your work first out in front of a whole lot of people and develop a bit of a following if you can. It's important to have things like websites and, I suppose, a presence on social media. There's a lot to discuss in this, and as a matter of fact, I'm running out of time for this podcast. So I'll wrap this up by simply emphasizing the idea that today, the contemporaries around you, friends, families, neighbors, the people in your county, your state, your country, those are your audience. The people who are here today, who have the same sensibilities artistically that you do today, the people who might be candidates to see your work in front of them, original prints and books that you have, today, that's your audience. And at the risk of concluding this on a commercial message, which I probably shouldn't do, but I will anyway, we have a 14-hour streaming workshop on this topic called Finding an Audience for Your Work that is available to members of Lenswork Online. And if you're interested in thinking more about how you get your work in front of an audience today, that workshop might be a good place to start. It's divided into lots of different topics, commerce being one, presentation being another, subject matter being another. You'll see it when you go through the table of contents, but that's a resource that you might be interested in using. In the meantime, hopefully I've given you something to think about relative to perhaps the fanaticism that I had about pursuing an audience in the future and all that time and energy that I spent in my youth pursuing archival fantasies as the primary effort I engaged to get my work out into the world with the idea that somehow an audience in the future was a more important goal and pursuit than the audience that surrounds me today.
Copyright 2025, Lenswork Publishing.